Welcome to the world of Mark's Money Mind, coming to you from Longmont, Colorado. I am your host, Mark Troutman. This educational personal finance show combines money lessons, timely topics, personal stories, and community wisdom to help listeners and viewers master their finances to enjoy a stress-free life of financial freedom. Well, this past weekend, I was at the Economy Conference in Cincinnati, Ohio. And you may ask, what is the Economy Conference? And that is spelled with a M-E at the end, by the way. If you do a quick Google search, it will say the Economy Conference is a three-day in-person event in Cincinnati, Ohio, focused on the financial independence, retire early, FIRE movement, designed to build community and educate attendees on managing time, money, and energy. Founded by Diana Merriam, it features speakers and workshops designed to inspire and connect people at all stages of their financial journey, often described as a party about money. I particularly like that last phrase, a party about money. While there's a lot of new people there, I also find it to be a really big reunion of my five friends where we connect and catch up with each other every year. A lot of people go to Camp Fies that I've talked about before on the show around the country, and those are much smaller, usually around 50 or 60 people. And this event is, I don't know the total this year. It's definitely more than 500. I don't know that it's quite 600 people, but it's quite large. So it is kind of cool to see everyone that our paths have crossed throughout the year and kind of have this big family reunion. We like to call it our five family. So it was super fun to attend this year, and it gets better every single year. And I was talking to Diana about this, and I think she's done a fantastic job. I want to say this was the sixth one. And people often ask me how many I've been to, and I did not go to the first one, but I've been to every one since then. And they are definitely getting much better. It's kind of like TEDx presentations in the morning and then breakout sessions in the afternoon. And they're quite good. And I know that her speakers, while some of them are definitely professional speakers, or at least have spoken before on large stages, a number of them, many of them, as a matter of fact, are just members of the community. And I have been on that stage myself, and it is quite intimidating to be up there in front of 500 people. And fortunately, I was on a panel, so I was surrounded by friends while I was up there. But most of the presentations, or all of them this year on the main stage, are just an individual, no lectern, standing up there and making a approximately 20-minute presentation. If you've never done that before, that takes a lot of guts to get up there. And to do it well is certainly an art. And I think everyone brought their A game this year. And I was so pleased because a lot of my friends were up there. And it was just really fun to see them do such a great job. And I think they do it for the community. And they also do it for Diana, giving them the opportunity to get up there. And they nailed it. So it was great. And I'm not going to go into detail on what those presentations are, because they ran the gamut from talking about how stocks work and valuations to different nuances of retirement planning, and also when things may not go exactly to plan and how to make adjustments for that in your FI journey. The nice thing is that Diana records all of these and posts them on the Economy YouTube channel. And I'll put a link in the show notes so that you can see ones from prior years. And I don't know how quickly the ones from this year will be posted, but they will definitely be in that YouTube channel at some point. So instead of going over those, because you will be able to see them, I wanted to talk a little bit about the breakout session that really inspired me this time. The way the breakouts work is that there are four different breakouts each day, and there are two different sessions. So technically there's eight a day, and then repeat it in the second day. So out of the eight, you can effectively see four of them. A number of my friends also did those too. So it was kind of fun to see them do that. And it's a little bit more laid back. It's a little easier to do those, but it was a great time. And it's always fun to see everyone interact with each other. And they tend to be discussions more than presentations. And occasionally it's just a presentation as well with Q&A afterwards. But the one I wanted to talk about today was my friend Charmarie discussed travel card rewards and redemptions. And I kind of view myself as pretty good at that stuff, but she's really funny. I would say it's kind of dry humor. So you're not even sure that it's coming at you until it does. And it's hilarious. During the day, she's a physics professor. So obviously very good at getting up in front of a group of people. And we were actually in a kind of a movie theater, or I guess you would say a lecture hall. So I'm sure she was super comfortable doing that. And she's really good at her presentations. And I've seen her before do some presentations on the FinTalks cruise that I frequently go on. And that's where, well, I met her at Camp Fives, but also met her on the FinTalks cruise. Anyway, so she was giving a presentation on travel card rewards and redemptions. And I asked her ahead of time how in-depth would she be going, and she said it was intended to help people that were new to this, but also give some advanced information. And I said, you know, I'm going to go because I really enjoy her talks, and also I think I might have something to learn. So I decided to go, and I sat right in the front row, and I really enjoyed the conversation she had. And what she kind of walked through was a website that helps with managing all of your cards and points. And it also has a course, kind of a tutorial, step-by-step course on how to play this game. I don't know if game is the appropriate word, but we're going to use that. I'm going to stick with that throughout the podcast because I think it's a fun word. I do want to back up and preface this with what I've said plenty of times before, which is you are using credit cards to gather points. And in order to make this work to your advantage, you need to pay the cards off in full every month. If you don't do that, this game is not one to play. The second thing is you don't want to be charging things on cards that you wouldn't ordinarily do. So you don't want to say, I'm going to buy this thing because I'm going to get points. That defeats the whole purpose. That is not going to help in creating value with points and so forth, because the value of the points is a fraction of what you spend. The course, it's 10xtravel.com, and I will put that in the show notes. The course is a step-by-step tutorial from being somebody that is completely unaware of how any of this works to people that are a little bit more advanced, like myself, I would say. And Charmarie, being a teacher, challenged us with taking the course as homework and really, really impressed upon us that we should take this course. And I decided, well, can't hurt, you know, let me check it out. And it's a phenomenal course. Now, of course, someone did ask in the group, like, okay, so this course is free. What does this website get out of this? Great question, because you always want to ask, if something is free, there's got to be something to it. There's got to be a catch. There's got to be some reason this organization is providing a free course. Are they trying to sign you up for something? Do they want to charge you some premium membership? What's the story here? Well, what they do is they list different credit cards that potentially you could use in your travel and rewards program. And if you click on those links, they do get paid. That's considered an affiliate link. I don't have any affiliation with 10X Travel. I don't receive anything. And just so you're aware, I'm not talking about this because I'm receiving anything, and they don't receive anything unless you click through and get one of the cards through one of their links. But you don't have to. And the other thing they do is, if you do accumulate points and you're kind of like, this is going to be too hard to figure out how to redeem these, they can assist you with a paid program where a at some flat rate, and then they will look at all of, let's say you want to go to Paris next year, and these are the dates, and these are the points you have, how would you do it? They will do that for you, or at least show you how you could do it for a fee. Of course, you don't have to do that. And I think if you went through the course, you wouldn't need to do that. Anyway, so I went through the course from beginning to end, and I did it over Monday and Tuesday. So, Jean-Marie, if you're listening, I've completed my homework. And it was phenomenal. It really was. I expected not to learn anything, or if so, very minimal, but I learned a lot. Some of the key takeaways were, and some of these I already knew, but I'm going to cover a few of them. One is that, let's say you get one of these cards, and I've talked about these in prior shows. Let's say it's a card that offers you 5x points on airlines, for example, or 4x points on hotels, or 3x points on travel. And you think, oh, I'm going to get that card because it has all of these bonus features on these charges. Now, that's a benefit of the card, but the real benefit is the sign-up bonus. Most of these cards will have somewhere around 75,000, 100,000, even more sign-up bonus points if you meet a certain spending requirement within a certain period of time. An example would be a card that's going to offer you a 75,000 point bonus if you spend $4,000 in the next 3 months. Let's say you do that and you spend $4,000. Well, you're going to get points for those $4,000 spent, and it might be 1x, 2x, 3x, 4x, whatever. That combined with the 75,000 sign-up bonus could be effectively 20 points per dollar spent in that example. And that's really where you get your most benefit. So the way that I would say the more advanced people play this quote game is that you focus on sign-up bonuses, which means that you need to be getting new cards frequently. And of course, most people would say, now, wait a minute. Isn't that dangerous? Isn't my credit score going to go down significantly? Are there any drawbacks to doing this? And the answer is, as long as you are kind of playing by the rules of the game, and there are a number of rules, and they cover many of these, getting multiple cards is not necessarily a bad thing, as long as you kind of spread it out and you understand when to and when not to get new cards. And obviously, if you need to meet these sign-up bonuses, you're not going to be able to open 10 cards unless you are a huge spender. So you're going to have to spread them out. But the key is focusing on the sign-up bonuses over the card categories themselves. The other thing to focus on, which I have noticed myself in kind of doing this for a while, is focusing on the cards where the points are transferable. So what I mean by that is, let's say you have a Chase Sapphire card. They have preferred and reserve. I'm just using it as an example. I do have the reserve card, but I'm using it as an example. When you earn points on that card, it goes into what are called Chase Ultimate Rewards. And those points sit at the bank, in essence, in your account. Now, you could redeem them through the Chase Travel Portal, but that's not usually the best redemption. The best redemption frequently is sending those points to a travel partner, such as a hotel like Hyatt or an airline like United or Southwest, and then using the points there. And the nice thing about focusing on transferable points, and this actually came up very recently, in that Hyatt has changed its redemption value of the points. They've reorganized their point system, and they're not as valuable as they once were. So if you had all your points over at Hyatt and they changed the rules or the redemption rewards and raised the cost of each hotel night, for example, you're stuck because all the points are at Hyatt. If you had the points at Chase, you could say, okay, well, instead of transferring to Hyatt, how about I transfer them to United when I need them, or Southwest when I need them? So what you do is you keep them at the banks, and the big ones are like Chase and Capital One and American Express and Bilt. Anyway, you keep your points there and only transfer them over as you need it. The other thing that was discussed in the course, and I will link to the website And I'll talk a little bit about how the website's organized a little bit later. But the other thing that I learned was the best way to do award searches. So let's say you are interested in flying to, I'll use a flight that I'm doing soon here as an example. I am flying from Denver to Amsterdam. So that's the goal. Fly from Denver to Amsterdam. How do I find an award flight that is most advantageous to me? Well, first thing I can do is find out who flies from Denver to Amsterdam and who does so with the least amount of stops. Well, my research showed that British Airways is one of those. United is also one of those. And so I compare, well, what would it look like to fly on British Airways, or what would it look like to fly on United from Denver to Amsterdam, and find those flights, and then do award searches on each of those two airlines. Pretty simple. And it might say, now I did end up getting a business class seat because I usually try to get those if I can. On United, I don't even remember what it was because a while ago when I did this, it was really expensive. I want to say 150,000 or 200,000 points. So I was like, well, that doesn't make sense. And then on British Airways, it was like, I want to say like 115,000 points. I was like, okay, so that's better. So then what should I do? Just move points from the partner that I can transfer points to British Airways and just book the flight and call it done? Well, that's one option, but there are better options. The airlines, well, I'll just say all of the major airlines are in alliances. So for example, in this case, British Airways has an alliance that they're part of, and so is American Airlines. And I had points over at American Airlines, so I just, by chance, decided, well, let me see if an American Airlines flight works. And while American Airlines does not fly from Denver to Amsterdam, British Airways does. And I was like, well, you know, let me just see what the points situation would be there. When I searched for award travel on American Airlines, lo and behold, a British Airways flight showed up. I think it was around 58,000 points. Well, that's a lot less than 115,000 points over British Airways. So then I decided, well, I will just book this flight on American with my American miles, but I'm flying on British Airways. And that was just by chance that that happened for me. Now, the course went through this a little bit more in detail, and here's how they suggest you do it, which I thought was brilliant. I've used in the past like pointsya.com and point.me.com to find all of these nuances, kind of like booking with one partner and flying on another. However, what I learned in the course is that they don't always show up in those sites. So the best way to do it, from their approach, is to start off the way I did, find out who's flying there. So let's say it's United. Okay, who are United's partners? United is part of Star Alliance. So who are the Star Alliance partners? And then go one by one through each partner looking for rewards flights for that flight. And frequently, you will find that same flight on United, for example, in this case, booked through a partner at a much lower points value. And then you move the points to that partner and then book it that way. And then you're still flying on the same United flight. Quite interesting. I always thought that by using one of these aggregators like PointsYeah and Point.me, I would cover my bases. But as I found out when I went to, well, I'm flying to French Polynesia next year, and I used both of those, and I would assume the flights would show up on both. But in fact, one of the flights, the one I ended up booking, which was on Air Tahiti Nui, but booked on Qantas with Qantas points, transferred from, I think it was Capital One, showed up on Points Yeah as a option, but did not show up on Point.me. And I'm like, why wouldn't they both see it? So I kind of confirmed that, yeah, these flights don't always show up on those aggregators. So something to keep in mind. So that was one thing. Another thing that I thought was quite interesting is, and I'm aware of this rule, it's called the Chase 524 rule, which basically means that Chase will not issue you a new card if you have had 5 new cards from anyone, not just Chase, in the last 24 months. As a result of that rule, you want to think about how you are choosing to apply for new cards and get new cards because of that rule. Now, once you hit that 524, let's say, that doesn't prohibit you from getting a card from another bank. It just prohibits you from getting a card from Chase. So understanding the 524 rule is super important because a lot of the Chase cards are ones that are very beneficial to get. The other thing I thought was quite interesting is that the decision on which card to get next. A lot of times people will decide, hey, I'm going on this trip and United is a flyer to that whatever airport, so I should get the United card and then I'll get points and then I can get the flight. When the reality is, in many cases, there's a better card that you should get, especially one that has transferable points, or potentially it's a business card if you have a business. So the hard part is kind of deciding what's the next best card for me. And it may be very different than the next best card for a friend who's saying, hey, I just got this card and it's working great for me. But that may not be your next best card. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how this website can help you with that. The other thing that was in the course, which I thought was really good, is Southwest offers what's called a companion pass. So that allows you to assign a companion who will fly for free with you on your itinerary. And there's a little bit of a challenge in getting the companion pass in that you need 130,000, or at least at the time of this recording, approximately 130,000 points to be able to get a companion pass. And it doesn't work by transferring points to Southwest. You need to earn it on the card. However, sign-up bonuses count. Now, they don't have a big enough sign-up bonus to get 130,000 points, but you could do it through 2 different cards, and you would have to have a personal card and a business card because you can't get 2 personal cards at the same time, blah, 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 blah. But anyway, I've never done this because I've never had a companion that I would want to fly with me. But if you're a couple and you want both people to fly together or both people fly together frequently, it's a great option. And there's a whole section on how to get the Southwest Companion Pass, and the Southwest cards are Chase cards. So you also need to be careful about the 524 rule. So there's a lot of nuances here. And then there's also what's called two-player mode. I love that name. I just think it's so fun. Two-player mode. And that is if you and a partner are working towards the same objective, and that is gathering points so you can travel together. And there are ways to do that as a two-person household, for example, or even 2 people that are friends and are kind of working together. You can refer each other to cards. You can work on getting points in the same rewards programs. So for instance, one person could book the 2 tickets in one direction and another person could book the 2 tickets in the opposite direction. So it's called two-player mode. It's a whole section on that. And then there's also discussion on when to close these cards, because if you're going to be opening new cards all the time, you do need to have a kind of method to when do you cancel the cards and when is it too soon to cancel the cards. Little tip, don't cancel cards within the first 12 months. Wait until the 13th month, until that annual fee posts. And then if you want, that's when you can cancel the card and you can get that annual fee refunded or waived as a result of it being canceled in the first month when the annual fee hits. So that's also important to not just collect these cards and not have a way to cull them out over time. Really good course. Highly recommend it for anyone, especially people new to the game, as well as to people who are advanced. You will definitely learn something in this course unless you are just been doing this for decades, for example. And even then, you might learn something. Now, going back to the website itself, so I thought I would be going to the website, I'd take the course, and I'd learn everything, hopefully I needed to, and then that would be it. Well, what I have found is that the website is quite good at managing this whole process. So when you log on to the website, you'll see on the left-hand side, and I think you probably have to put in your email address to get into the website to see the dashboard and all that stuff, because you have to have a username and login if you're going to save information for yourself on this site. And I'll explain why I think that's beneficial to do. Once you do that, you're brought to a screen, and on the left-hand side, there's kind of menus. And what's interesting is that on the top menu is your dashboard. And I'm not going to go over that just yet, because it really summarizes everything that's in your profile on the website. So the next one down is called My Wallet. And what's interesting is you can load all of your credit cards. Now, you can link them, and it will gather all the information from the cards. I am not a big fan of doing that. I like to manually enter stuff. I don't like to link my accounts to different websites. So I decided to enter everything manually. And all it's really tracking is, what card do I have? It will ask you the last four digits. You don't have to put it in there, but I don't think there's a harm in putting the last four digits in there. It'll ask you, what's the credit limit? When did you open it? If you closed it, when did you close it? And then also, if it's a new card and you're going after a sign-up bonus, you can say what that bonus is, what the minimum spend requirement is, and how long you have to meet that minimum spend requirement. And then it's going to track everything for you, even if you put everything manually. So I did that. I put in all my cards. And the value of putting all the cards in there, and I also put ones that I've already closed, but I closed within the last 24 months, because it will track that Chase 524 rule for you. And I think that's quite beneficial, because I have a spreadsheet where I've done it in the past, but this is a much cleaner way of doing it. And then it organizes it by bank. And if you have a business, it'll separate those out. And I think it's just a really great way to see all of your cards in one place and how you're working your program, I guess you would say. The next menu item on the left-hand side is what's called My Points. And in here, you can track all of your points at the different rewards programs. And they're further delineated by airline, hotels, and flexible currency. You can see them all on one page, or you can see them individually by clicking on airline, hotels, or flexible currency. And you can also link these and it'll automatically update. Like I said, I don't like to do that. So I've entered everything manually, and I've decided that once a month, I will go in here and update these figures. Or if I got an email that said, let's say sometimes from the rewards programs, it'll give you a statement. So whenever I get a statement, I'll go in and update it. Anyway, so the flexible currency ones are like the banks, which would be like Capital One, Chase, Amex, Citi, Built, things like that. And then you have the hotels. I have a whole bunch of these. So rewards programs that I even forgot that I had, but it gave me an opportunity to say, I think I have one of those Hilton Honors accounts. Let me go and see how many points I have. And I put it in here. So it's nice that I'm tracking everything in one place. And then the airlines, same thing, you know, United, Southwest, American, Singapore, all these different airlines that I have these rewards programs with, now I can see everything in one place. So that's super helpful. Now, if I let the website update it automatically, I'm sure it would do it behind the scenes. But again, I don't like to link anything, so I have committed to doing this manually. The next category is My Next Card on the left-hand side here, menu item. And this is really interesting, because I had always kind of looked at, I wonder what card I should get next. And I would talk to friends and I would look at different bonuses out there. And I kind of was just taking a stab in the dark, I guess you would say. The cool thing about this software is if you've loaded all of your cards in here, it's going to help you decide what is the next best card for you, given which cards you already have, where you stand on the 524 rule on Chase, the bonus options out there, the spending requirements. And for instance, right now I'm under the 524. So I'm looking at my suggestion. It suggests the next best card, but it also suggests many others like the second best card, the third best card, and so forth. And right now, it's saying I should get, I have the reserve card. It's saying I should get the Sapphire Preferred card. It tells me what the current offer is, tells me how much I need to spend. It also has this little notation that says this card will add to your 524 account. So it's kind of interesting. And of course, they benefit if you click through and apply for the card right from the website. That's how they make their money. You don't have to do that, of course. Or maybe you have a friend that's going to refer it to you instead. But it's a really nice way to kind of look at, I wonder which card I should be considering next. And then it has a list of other cards. And what was interesting is the other day, I was actually at 524. And then today, when I look at it, I guess one of my cards dropped off. So now I'm 424. And previously, when I went on, it was saying, well, it didn't recommend a Chase card because it couldn't get it because of the 524 rule. And it was recommending a Capital One card. And now that Capital One card is my number two choice. And the Chase card is the number one choice. They both have about the same number of bonus points. So I'd have to dive into it a little bit deeper into why the Chase card over the Capital One is being recommended, but it's very interesting. Now, the next section on the left-hand side of the screen is called My Credit Score. So you can track your credit score. I believe you can do it automatically, but again, like I said, I don't like to do that. So I've added my score in manually. Now, here's something else I learned in the course, which I guess I was not as well versed in, but I kind of had a feeling. So if you get your credit score from your bank, let's say, so like Chase, you can go into My Credit Journey and see a score that's printed there. That's actually not the exact score that a credit card company is going to be looking at. It's kind of Chase's best guess as to what your score is. And what I learned in this course, which I was completely unaware of, is that you can get your FICO score from Experian. And I always assumed that you had to pay for that, but you don't. What you do is you log into your Experian credit account, which I have logins at the three major credit reporting agencies. I think I've talked about this in the past. I do lock down my credit, so it's frozen. So if I want to get a new card, I have to go unfreeze it. So therefore, I have a login at Experian. So I went in there, and sure enough, you can get the score for free. And then what I've done is I've updated this website with my score, which is a much better tracking mechanism than looking at the ones and things like Credit Karma or your bank. What's interesting, however, is what I did notice, and I'd have to verify this, is that the score I'm seeing when I log into my American Express account says FICO score, and the numbers match what I'm seeing on the Experian account. So it's possible that American Express is actually reporting this number too. I would have to check to see that, but that seems to be the case. Anyway, so it's a really nice place to keep everything, your cards, your points, what card might be best, your credit score, all in one place. And of course, the more you go to this site, the more likely you are to click through a card, and that I'm sure that's their objective, right? But the cool thing is, going back to the dashboard, which is the first item on the list on the left-hand side, is you see everything on one screen. So it's showing me how many cards I have open, how many I closed, my total points across all of my rewards programs, my total annual fees, which I think is pretty cool. It also says, in my case, I have one fee due soon. If I click on that, it tells me which card that is and what the due date is. I think that's great. So it gives you the option to see, oh my God, I have a fee coming up. Let me go and review this card and decide, is this one I want to keep or do I want to close it? And then it tells you what your 524 status is for Chase. And there's a little drop-down menu, and it tells you which cards are being counted in your current 524 number. So I think that's just great. I've never really had that. I've kind of built a spreadsheet that kind of does it. And then it also shows on this dashboard the next card it's suggesting. It's showing my credit score. It's also showing where you stand in your course. And Ivor, really cool. Congratulations. You've finished the course. Little graphic, which is fun. It will also show you, and I don't have any currently, but any current spending requirements that you're working on, and also which cards those minimum spends are on. So I think that's great. I don't have any in effect right now, so it'll be interesting to see how that goes. And then it also has a little section on, you can put in your travel goals and things like that, a little picture of where you're interested in going, I guess, to give you an incentive. And then there's a section on the bottom here that talks about enabling companion pass mode for the Southwest card. I don't know exactly what that is. I haven't enabled it because I'm not interested in the companion pass, but if you were, I'm sure it would then be giving you some more information on how you might achieve that objective. So anyway, this was kind of a rundown on this website and the course. And I would like to say to Charmarie, if you're listening, I did my homework and I learned a lot. Thanks for your presentation. It was exceptional. And I will see you in Alaska because we are on the FinTox cruise together. And if you are planning on going to Economy next year, and I'll put the link to the Economy conference in the show notes, and next year's event is March 19th to March 21st of 2027, I will see you there. Until next time, enjoy your spring and hopefully the warmer weather coming your way. Thank you for listening to this week's show. Please click follow on your favorite podcast player or subscribe on YouTube to ensure you don't miss any future episodes. Also, please leave a rating and review for the show. This helps improve the ranking and enables other like-minded people to find the content in their podcast players. I would also appreciate it if you would recommend the show to friends and family that might benefit from this content. See you next time on the Mark's Money Mind Show. Until then, make some, save and invest, live on the rest. Now for that all-important disclaimer. This show is for education and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered investment, tax, or legal advice. Please consult the appropriate advisor or advisors before implementing anything you hear on this show or any other show for that matter. While I fully intend for everything on this show to be true and accurate at the time of each recording, occasionally errors may occur, so please do your own due diligence on anything discussed.